Now, certain ideas, certain philosophical ideas, are abstract, and a person has to devote his mind and his energies, his mental energies, to these problems in order to resolve them. The difficult problems, abstract problems in philosophy. We're basically confronted all our lives with problems. That's the nature of life. But there are two different types of philosophical areas, philosophical ideas. One type demands energy, work, in order to penetrate, to ponder, and to understand the question, but and gain knowledge. That's one. But there's another kind of philosophical idea that a person has to keep in the back of his mind. It's an idea. It's something which is like a philosophical tenet that a person has to keep in the back of his mind. It's like a type of compass, you might say, which guides a person, through life. And I think the last Mishnah that we did is actually presents such an idea. I can't give you the solution to the problem, but I think it's something that we should recognize, an important thing to recognize. In the last Mishnah, the Mishnah discusses the stages of life, And it goes through the various ages and what a person should do or what a person is capable of doing in each age. And it shows you he reaches his peak and then... And he reaches his peak in terms of his inherent qualities. Then his then man is capable of development, and he reaches that peak like 20 years later. And then after that, he reaches a peak in terms of how he could handle the affairs of this world because his energies are in a proper balance. Age 50, age 60, 70, and then it shows you the decline. In the end, it gives you the decline. Even if a person should live to be 100. It shows you the decline. It's essentially, well, Gvurasa really is when it begins. Where my interpretation of Gvurasa is that it means that the person requires a special courage to be able to cope with the physical problems, the deterioration of the human being in age in the 80s. In the 90s is where there is decline, an actual decline in every aspect. And 100 is simply mentally, intellectually, mentally, he has nothing to do with this world. He's already... His existence is equal to his non-existence. But the thing that we, when we read this, I mean, we know it's true, it's reality. Of course, people don't want to recognize that reality. But the greatness of Yadus is, and this is something which in our society we fight tremendously. In our society, it's either one of two ways. Either a person denies his mortality, he's forever youthful, and he'll do anything that he can to retain his youth, and if he can't retain his youth, he'll do anything he can to retain the appearance of youth, at least the appearance of youth. So people will go through painstaking operations, which are dangerous, harmful, but they take chances. Because why do they do it? Because the illusion of youth, which means to say the person cannot somehow adjust to reality. He can't adjust to reality of life. And either they have to deny the reality, or else the other side of the coin is they fall into depression. They accept the reality, they fall into depression. Our society is either or. Either you're depressed because you accept the reality, the person's getting older, what's it all about? There's no in the end is you get old, you get weak, you deteriorate, you die, and that's it. Everything's worthless, so that I might as well sit home, do nothing, be in total depression. That's one way. The other way is total denial. I'm young forever. Nothing will ever happen to me. I'm healthy. I'm young. I'm this. And that. That's the other approach. But our society is too extreme. Somehow or other, in our society, man can't come to grips with reality. Can't be happy with reality. Can't find that niche in his mind. Where to place this life? Where do you put it? I mean, he found a happy way of looking at it, viewing it. The greatness of Chazal was, and that's why they go to extremes. They're always extremes. Either you indulge like a maniac in this existence, or else you withdraw totally. One of the two. Happy medium you can't find. The greatness of Chazal, that was the greatness of Chazal, of course, the Torah philosophy, that they were able to handle it properly. They were able to be happy in life, and they knew that it was only a temporary thing. It didn't make them depressed. It's the amazing thing about Chazal. Like, Chazal value wealth. They value wealth. It's a very good thing. Well, it's a very good thing. But the Gemara says, matter of fact, one Amora told another Amora, he's a wealthy man, he says, enjoy life now, he says, because death comes up very quickly. So, it wasn't depressed, and then not depression. They can recognize this is Chaye Shaw. But Chaye Shaw had a place in their mind where they could look at this life and be happy and accept it, enjoy the benefits, and yet not maintain that this is the ultimate. And one thing is not real. In our society, we can't do that. We cannot do that somehow. People can't adjust to the reality of life. It's Chaye Shaw. It's temporary. Enjoy it as you go along, but don't put everything into this. This is not the. But it's something. It's not nothing. As I said, love is such a comedian. A few carnies that I've been trained on. Don't be like those people that lose both worlds. That you lose the next world because you don't learn Torah law. You're learning for ulterior motives. You lose this world because you're not enjoying the daily life. It's true, transient. It's not permanent, but nevertheless, it's something. It's a fire show, okay? Some of the people that's the fault of our society. You can't look at things. That's why you have extremists. Become a recluse or live an ascetic existence, you know, you won't partake of any enjoyment, I'm only learning Torah, I can't enjoy anything. That's again as the Yishalmi says, a person that can't enjoy life is a balmum. Like a balmum. That's the whole idea of the carbon of the Nazir, the carbon contest of the Nazir, because the Nazir borders on that kind of thing. But somehow or other, I mean, we can't find the proper balance. And the greatness of Chazal, their greatness was that they were able to see to see it properly. Be happy with the fact that with the Chaye Shaw. So, of course, the main involvement is Torah and learning and the life of the soul. But the life of the soul didn't exclude the Chaye Shaw. There was a balance. That's what's difficult. And that last Mishnah is the one that really I think it hits home most on that point. When you read the Mishnah, you study the Mishnah, that point becomes clear. There's no doubt it has to do, I believe, it has to do a lot with the neurotic society that we're raised in. I mean, the neurotic values, which is basically stems, in my opinion, from the Christianized society. And the Christianized idea of religion, which is the total distortion of human nature. And as much as we think that we're in Yadus, but the effects are severely felt. Because a person prevents a person from seeing clearly his proper sights. It's something a person has to keep in mind. I think as a person advances, in Torah, as a person advances, as I say, a person becomes happier. I'm supposed to feel happy. Not supposed to be depressed. Supposed to be more happy. More happy means in his personal, simple psychological world. The psychological world is not the ultimate world. We know the ultimate world is the world of the soul, the world of the neshama. But the psychological world should be at the ultimate. And Bagbag Omer, very famous question, probably the most famous. Afolchba de kulaba. Okay. I see. Next mission says Ben Hehe. There were two people, Ben Hehe and Ben Bagbag. Okay, Ben Hehe, why is it called Ben Hehe? Strange name. Because he was a ger. So he was a ger, so he called himself the son of Avram and Sarah. So Avram, there was an additional Hey, Avraham, plus Avram on Goyim and Asafiha, and Sarah, I'll take a Sarai, ki Sarah Shema. So she also, the Hey was added to her name. So he called himself Ben Hehe. Means that he was the direct descendant of these two people. See, He was the intellectual descendant of Avram and Sarah. Okay, what's Ben Bagbag? Maybe you could figure it out. Bays and Gimel is how much? Hey. It's the same thing as Ben Hey Hey. So he said, what did he say? He said, ha-folk-ba-va-folk-ba de kula-ba. That means a person should constantly, ha-folk-ba means, it means he's constantly involved. He's constantly turning up. He's involved in Torah. He's thinking new ideas. He's leafing. He's digging beneath the surface. He's investigating. He's pondering. That's what it means, a folkba. A folkba, continue to ponder in it, to dig in it, to be involved in it. Why? The kulaba. Because everything is in Torah. Okay. Sounds nice. But the question is, what do you mean everything is in Torah? Everybody always tell you, a folkba, the kulaba. Everything's in Torah. Everything's in Torah, is that true? I mean, if I want to know astronomy, should I study Torah? All right, so you'll tell me astronomy. The Rambam says that we had our own astronomy. That the Bnei Yisachar is Yodei Bino Le'itim. They knew astronomy. We had our astronomy before the Greek astronomy. That's true. That's correct. We had astronomy. That's correct. But does that mean to say that, even if I should say that, does that mean to say that the Gemara says you can't say a folk club, the Kulabar? And does that mean that astronomy was there's nothing more to study besides that astronomy? That was the ultimate astronomy? I mean, there's no every discovery that was to be made was known in that astronomy. I don't believe that's the case. And besides, what about biology? The subjects are almost infinite. The areas of, aside from the major headings, the particulars, it's infinite. So what does it mean everything is in Torah? What does it mean? Everybody always says that. Folk, the kulaba. Everything's in Torah. I'd like to hear somebody define exactly what that means. Without saying something nonsensical. That, by your son say, well, if you study a pasuk, you'll figure out, from a pasuk, you'll figure out a certain characteristic of a certain animal or something. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, that's not the way to study. The way to study biology is not studying Chumash. So the Rambam got his knowledge in all fields. He got his knowledge studying. He studied the fields. You can't get your knowledge of biology from Chumash. Doesn't make any sense. So what does it mean, a folk bubba, folk bubba, kula bubba? Everybody always says that everything's in Torah. I mean, everything's in Torah. It has to make sense. Okay? Very nice to praise the Torah and say everything's in there, but if it doesn't make any sense, then it's not a praise anymore. It's just saying something ridiculous. That's what he wants to say. Even if a person never went outside the system of Torah, he got told perfection, that certainly is true. Because even though the Rambam might disagree somewhat. The Rambam seems to say in the Yad, the Avas Hashem is tied to a certain knowledge of the universe. Okay, but I could argue that. That's not such an ironclad argument. I could say that that's not true, and that if a person studies the Chochmas HaTorah, he was giving you one instance, but the Chochmas HaTorah, and this is the way he says in Sefer Mitzvah, as a matter of fact, he says Chochmas HaTorah. So Chochmas HaTorah is enough. A person can see God's infinite wisdom from the Chochmas HaTorah, and he learns from Torah the proper ethical way of life, that's true, and also the philosophical ideas. So Torah is a complete thing. A folk bob, a folk bob, the cool bob. That's not a bad shot. Yes? No, what is this? Definitively, I would say like this. It means like this. It means, see, every area of knowledge, is based on premises. Certain philosophical premises. The area of knowledge, when you study one sentence of the area of knowledge is based on certain philosophical premises. What it means, a folkba, the kulaba, it means all the underlying philosophical premises of every science is in Torah. There's no science, there is no such thing as a science which will come out with philosophical conclusions that are against the philosophical conclusions of Torah. And if it does, it means that their idea is wrong. It's incorrect. Okay? And, as a matter of fact, I think I spoke about this before, but the question in modern physics of materialism versus mentalism is definitely one which Yadis can resolve, and that is, there is no question of mentalism. That the underlying entities of the universe are mental, are ideas, are mental phenomena. The physical is only an apparition. Physical is only something which is an illusion, it's an appearance. That's something which scientists debated through the centuries, and which Yadis, if someone studies Torah, studies ideas of Torah, you see that conclusion is clear. It's clear from the methodology of Torah, from the approach, the analytical approach of Torah, the method of analysis of Torah. These are all metaphysical principles, but they're not just in the world of metaphysics. They reach down deep into the world of human thought. There's a big argument, a current argument among the scientists. How should the knowledge of man proceed? Should we follow the beauty of arguments, or should we concentrate more on practical experiments and forget about whether our appreciation of the ideas? Is appreciation of ideas part of the mind, or is it just all we have to do is put together enough experimental evidence, and that's all we can do is limit ourselves to experimental evidence? Tremendous argument between top scientists, biggest scientists in the world. Yadis, of course, casts his vote in favor of the idea of appreciation of ideas. That's the whole thing in Torah. So we say, if a person doesn't have a, if there's no beauty to an idea, then you might as well abandon it. Forget it. It's worthless. Except for the fact. But Yadis definitely tells us which approach is the correct approach. It's true that today most scientists are going in the other direction. For a while, they 50, 60 years ago, they were going the other way, our way. Before that, they were going again the way they're going now, the opposite way. But these things, these arguments are philosophy of science arguments, even though it's philosophy of science, but in Yadis, Yadis has a solution. Yadis has a position. Even the arguments that you find today going on among the highest echelons of physics, Yadis has something to say about it. Yadis might not discuss the atom, but it will give you an idea of what is the correct approach in terms of human thought to uncover if you're on the right track, if you're always not on the right track. You see? That Yadis has an important statement to make. And this is, that's what it means, I talk about the Kulaba. Kulaba doesn't mean in detail. Kulaba means in general principle. The general principles of Yadis are correct. And if a person wants to know where to go, he doesn't know, if he's not intuitively, he can't figure it out, Yadis can point the direction. Yadis can point the direction. In psychology, the same thing is true in psychology. Question, and you have all these different sheets in psychology, but the question is the behavioristic approach the correct one, or is the conceptual approach the correct one? Again, most today people go for the behavioristic approach, or they mix the two, whatever. But the point is, there's always an attraction away from ideas. Yadis maintains that's correct also, because man likes to think he's still used to from early youth to believe that whatever he sees and whatever his senses tell him is true is real. He has a hard time breaking away from that idea, so he's very partial to that concept. But but Yadis maintains no. That the investigations into animal behavior, not for knowledge of animal behavior, which could be valuable, but because they believe that this directly shows us the human behavior, is a point the Yadis completely nonsensical, and it's clear, it's against the pasuk in the Torah. You get a different element. Human intelligence is different, completely different. The comparisons that they make are totally nonsensical, and Yadis simply disagrees with any kind of investigation today. Is simply a waste of time. a waste of time. And the failure to recognize the uniqueness of the human mind and to understand what it is, what they should try to find out is exactly to define what it is. Then they'd be spending their time more beneficially. But the principles of Yadus affect every area, every area, even areas epistemology, even epistemology, which is extremely important. So it's amazing. It's nothing short of amazing when a person studies Torah and he sees how these ideas existed in the time of Chazal, and you see how advanced the method of thinking. And I mentioned this a number of times. I'll mention it again. As I said, the Rav one time said that when you study the most advanced methods of science today, they're not nearly as advanced as our methods of analysis in Gemara. It's true. It's true. When you study the thinkers of the world and you watch the way they think, the great minds, of course you can't take a great mind on his own turf because you don't have the expertise, you didn't spend your time in understanding his particular area. But take him outside of that area and look at his statements and you see it doesn't nearly approach the perfection of thought of Chazal and Arishan. It does not even approach it. It's almost shallow compared to theirs. So this approach of thinking, the methodology that we have and the approach that we have, surpasses even today's scientific approach. But let alone, years ago, the type of thing that went on in the Dark Ages, that's completely zero. Yes. Now, Yadav's not against experimentation. A person, on the contrary, experimentation, the mistake that Aristotle made was because he assumed that the world and the universe is simpler than it was. That was his big mistake. It's called naive realism. Naive realism means that you assume that the table is what I sense, what my senses are telling me about the table is what it is. That was proved to be false. That the world is much more complex, much deeper. And even the surface phenomena that we experience are not real in the sense that our minds tell us that it's real. So that's something that was because he assumed that that God's Chokhmah was simpler than it was. That was a mistake. That was a mistake of the... But experimentation is necessary because experimentation is humility demands experimentation. You can't assume the way God should make the universe. We have to experiment to discover. We have to be humble and realize that we only can uncover and then we can theorize. you can't make right of experimentation. But the question is, where does the quest end? Am I at the end of the quest when I see a beautiful idea? Or when I can simply summarize a phenomena? And whether it has intellectual beauty to it or not doesn't matter, it's irrelevant. I can summarize it, and I'm capable of working with it. That's the question. That's a good question. So what I'm saying is that everything is in it because every particular science is based on principles, and all those principles are in the Torah. So if you check for the principles, there's a tremendous value in doing that because by checking and learning the principles, you'll gain insight in how to further yourself in other areas. So really, it's significantly related to every area of investigation. Okay? And it's a guide for every area. Okay? Let's say today the area of physics, where physics is concentrated mostly upon recently, last couple of hundred years, on what phenomena? What phenomena do you constantly see if you study any area of modern physics? Yeah, but the specific. What objects? Light. Isn't it? I mean, light. That light, energy, light. Light is a form of energy. That's the whole. The whole science went into that area. That was after the discovery that things are not so simple. Light became the major area of investigation. Okay, what do we say every morning? Tov Yitzhak Avod Shmo. Kel Boruch Gedol Deo. Heichin Ufo'al Zorech Amo. Heichin Ufo'al Zorech Amo. It means Kel Boruch Gedol Deo. Eldea means the Chochmas Hashem. It's right after Hamelchem of Maramasach Hashem Kum Chochmas Isa. Moaz Ki Yanecha. Okay? Then he says, then he goes back. Then he goes, Rachem Aleinu, because that, then he goes to Tfilah. Then he goes back. Kael Baruch Ad Eldea. Heichen Afal Zorechama. So, you see recognition of God's endless Chochmah informing, told Yitzchak Rishon, Heichen Afal Zorechama, informing the light. That the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah recognize that in light lies tremendous chachma. That's the it's an amazing anticipation. Right there, you said every day. Okay, but that I believe is not from Anshei Knesset HaGedolah. I think that was it later. But that was from that's a peer. That was it later. But whatever. But it's from centuries and centuries ago. Centuries and centuries ago. Where it goes back, I don't know exactly. But it's an amazing, definitely predated any kind of problems that the modern physicists recognized, which was after Newton, the time of Newton. Yeah. They were. It's definitely, you see, it's part of Chochmas Hashem that created the world and created all the necessities for man, even all the drugs that we have that are from the, most of them are from natural sources. They duplicate them afterwards, but they are the origin of natural sources. And the way they work, we don't know. Most of them. Most of them don't know how they work. And the ones that we do know is after years of trying to unravel what it is. But anyone that tells you what science will be able to do is daydreaming. You cannot know what science will be able to do. No way to know. The thing that seems most simple could be the most difficult task. Because if you don't know the map of thought, it's like a person learning a sugya. Say, you know, I'll know the sugya tomorrow. Actually, if you don't know, you don't know what the problems are. You know what you're going to encounter. It's simple logic. The ones that say that we, or the ones that are always saying we're about to do something, are just arrogant people. We must differentiate between science and between the scientist. Scientist is a human being with the same kind of emotions as everybody else. So when he's talking based upon his emotions, there's no reality to it. You have to be careful. Just because people say things doesn't mean anything. You can't, how can you know what a problem is going to involve before you even before you know the answer? It's absurd. It's absurd. Like they thought they're going to cure. Remember when I was a teenager, 15 years old, it doesn't pay to quit smoking, because by the time you get cancer, they will have discovered a cure. And everybody was convinced that cancer is going to be obliterated in 5 years. They had a 5-year obliteration plan. Why? Because they just got rid of a series of diseases. They were very successful with the bacteriological diseases, the infectious diseases. All the infectious diseases were falling one after another. So man gets very arrogant right away, and every disease he's gonna cure. Just like with AIDS. In the beginning they said, in another year or two, we'll have a cure. By the way, someone in my yeshiva has better intuition. Danny Wolf said right away, remember years ago, it's good morning. He said right away, good intuition. He said right away, this thing is not so simple. Says, this thing could take years and years and years. I remember that. So yes, they're going to talk. But when people keep on saying they're about to, they have these about to have breakthroughs, is nonsense. You don't know what the breakthrough is going to be until you have it. You say about that. You see, knowing how the mind works is itself a very tricky kind of endeavor. Exactly. Because the question is, what are you using to figure out how it works? Okay. Right. Now, the obvious answer is, you're using the mind. Okay. So already you're in trouble. You see what I mean? Okay. That's why the main thing is to know what is mind. That's the main thing. To find out first what is mind before you start your investigation. Because if you don't know what mind is, so then you're using the wrong thing to begin with. And you can't possibly hope to get any further than you started with, which is basically nowhere. Okay? And what I'm saying to you is like this, that the Torah has very significant information with regard to what mind is. Very significant information with regard to what mind is. That's what the Torah teaches a person. And I say that if people had a greater knowledge of the basic principles of Torah, they would be even, they'd be able to advance quicker, because they would know which areas to approach and how to gain advancement, instead of waiting for one person to come along in centuries who happens to hit the right way because he happens to have good intuition in that area. event. But that's the way science works. Science, there are no rules in science. Science is simply, if you make discoveries, you can show predictability, you make discoveries, then people will listen to you. That's the way it works. There is no specific formula of how to think. If you can explain it somehow, people can understand what you're talking about, and somehow or other you can make predictions, then you're in the realm of science. But what kind of thought, the nature of thought, that no one really has bothered to be concerned with, besides Yadis. Yadis is concerned, when we learn it slow, when we understand the Tesis, I can communicate the shot in the Tesis to you, and yet I did not fulfill my obligation. Why? Because I didn't say it in a certain way. I didn't say it in a certain way, there's something lacking. Where do you find such a thing? No one thinks that way. I explained it already, what do you want? No, it doesn't have the precision of, we have in our mind a certain formula. There's a formula for an idea. It has to fit the formula properly. And once it does fit it and it clicks a certain way in the mind, then we say we understand it. Before that time, even though you can communicate, you can describe it, it's not good enough. And Yadis, you have an insistence on a certain kind of precise thinking. And that's why a person who's a Talmid Chacham can listen to any area, and he can listen to what the person's saying, and then he'll be able to define it even better than the person the originator stated it. Why? Because he knows how to put it in precise terms that it fits in properly, exactly into the categories of the human mind, categories of the human thought. That's where Yadis really, really reigns supreme. It's far advanced to other methods. Other methods don't work on this type of thing. Description, definition, they mix this, mix that. As long as you get the idea across, it's good enough. Yadis, not enough. Yadis insists on a certain type of thinking. Okay? I would just say, I would say, the Torah, first of all, is that the mind is an area unto itself. It's an area unto itself. And once you know that area, you won't confuse it with the other areas of life, and your appeal for an idea won't be based upon the practical, it won't be based upon other phenomena that are appealing to you for different reasons. See, things appeal to a person. Most people, before they're developed, all they have is a sense of, it appeals to me. That's about it. They don't know why, what, where. But when a person studies Torah, he learns to recognize different aspects of his internal life, and once he recognizes them, he'll say, "Well, this appeals to me, but it appeals to me for practical reasons, not because of ideational reasons." You see, a regular person can't differentiate. You have to take a person that everybody's a politician because everybody votes, right? So how do people vote? Based on appeal. Why it appeals to them, they don't know. Just, yeah, his position appeals to them. They can't analyze why this appeals to me because I happen to be working in this job, and that's why it appeals to me. But does it have universal value? Maybe next year it will be the most helpful thing for me. People can't think beyond a certain point. Something appeals to them like this. When a person studies Torah, he learns that there's an area of mind which you have to separate from the rest of the internal life. And you have to recognize what is mind and what is not mind. Okay? So when an idea has appeal to most people, it can have emotional appeal, and that's why they accept it. That's why they accept it. I saw recently an article about this person who's written over 19 pages and pages, and the whole idea is totally nonsensical. This is crazy. But he's taken seriously because it has a certain appeal. He has this, human intellect is the ability for man to see, to apply a sense of reality to phenomena beyond the physical. No animal can do that. No matter how intelligent it is. No animal will say the reason why the banana fell from the tree is because there's a principle here. That's the real reality. The banana is just one instance. But there's a real reality here of a principle going on out there. And that's what I should put my mind to. No animal could ever do that. It's completely impossible. Out of the realm, no matter how intelligent he appears to be, he's only intelligent because his instincts are looking for something, and he could get used to a few complex series, and he'll go through that series in order to gain satisfaction. But he could never sit down and think and say, "Ooh, there's a reality behind this. That's how it works." Never. That phenomenon is impossible. Okay? Is the specifics you will not find in the Torah, but you will never find in the Torah anything, any specific that goes against anything in the universe. That you won't find. But you won't find specific numbers. There is no doubt that years and years of research and effort done by people that ended up in dead ends could have been avoided if they knew Torah. That is one principle that they unequivocally. There's not a doubt about it, that in the scientific world, if the principles of Torah were known, that many, many efforts that were made and that wound up types of investigations that wound up at dead ends could have been avoided, without a doubt. Okay? Without going into specifics. The way of thinking of Torah, of our Mesorah, Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebalpeh, from the time of the Rishonim, the early Rishonim, what the Gemara calls Rishonim, the early Tanoim, Anshei Knesset HaGdolah, straight down through to the Rabbanus Feroi, the Gainim, the Rishonim, and even into the Achronim, if you see ideas that are not in line with that way of thinking, you must know right away they're impossible. Something wrong. If you're impressed with them, then you have to go to a Chacham and tell him, you know, this is what it seems to be correct. Why is it wrong? You have to ask questions. That's the Derech HaTorah. You have to ask questions. You're not supposed to just bury it and say it's wrong. A person is mechuyev, is obligated to question every aspect of Torah. And if he doesn't, he's giving up his whole right of bechira with regard to das. With regard to das, and mechuyev this, he's supposed to ask. But I can just tell you, as a guide, you know it's wrong. Next question is why it's wrong. The ideas of Yandas are an integrated system. Integrated system. They don't exist separately. I'll just give you another example, okay? Without going into too much, again, to my personal advance. Alright? The psychoanalytic approach in psychology is one which breaks up the mind into components. Okay? Like there's a superego, there's an ego, there's an id. Now I've seen other positions which are against the idea, the psychoanalytic approach, because they claim, and I've seen this in writing, critiques on psychoanalysis by other groups who have a different approach, behavioristic approach or whatever, and they say when you open up the brain, you do not find anywhere where it says superego or id, and I'm serious. I've seen it. Such a question, anyone that has studied anything of Torah knows that such a question is absolutely nonsensical. It's nonsensical. It just means that the person doesn't know what thinking is all about. It means that if I say that a person has certain emotions, and I could show you that there are certain emotions that have a common root, it's a logical deduction. So my next deduction is they come from a common source. And I don't have to open up the brain and find all the things written on it. It's like, I'm just giving an example of the type of questions and thinking that goes on out there which don't have any kind of rules. There's no principles. Just anybody asks a question. So yeah, you're right. It doesn't say superego inside the brain. You're right. That's right. It's a free-for-all. The world of science, or whether it's more of a free-for-all, of course, when you get away from the pure sciences. But when you go into areas of sociology, psychology, and history, it gets even worse. I'm just saying, in general, it's a free-for-all. And Yadis can teach a person how to think. They'll be able to recognize immediately certain types of thinking are absolutely have nothing to do with the mind. There's nothing to do with the mind. You're looking for some kind of physical thing. You're not thinking anymore. It's not the mind. Yes. Yeah. The Rambam in the Mora Nevuchim. So the Rambam says that that a magnet, amazing. The idea of a field, for instance, in science is a new idea. Okay, a field. It means to say that when you have two magnets that are attracting each other, so it's not that the magnet is attracting the other magnet through space somehow. It can't be, because how could one thing affect another thing through space? Where there has to be some kind of connection. So that's why they say there's a field. What does a field mean? A field means that there's the area of space between these two magnets becomes changed in a certain way, and that's why the two relate. So the two relate through the medium of the space. Now the Rambam in the Mora Nevuchim, amazingly, says that exactly. Number one. says that the way a magnet works is it affects the space between the two. Changes in the space. Which is really something that the physicists just came to rather recently. Now an idea like this, a conceptual idea of this, is something which is in line. A person that learns Torah knows he would come to that conclusion. He would say that action at distance is impossible. Because it just, his mind would tell him. The way of thinking would tell him it doesn't make any sense. Now a lot of effort has been spent on trying to work it out the other way. You see? For example, is an idea based on a physical phenomena in the brain? That's the question. The thinking process is based on it. You cannot think. If you hit a person over the head, you can't think. So it is obvious that the brain and there's something in the brain, mechanisms in the brain, mechanics of the brain, that are necessary in order to have thinking. But what we maintain is the appreciation of thought and the thought itself. Thought itself is not phenomena of the function of the brain itself. It's not a calendar. That's a function of the soul. That's a function of the soul. To put it like one of the ancients put it correctly is when a person sees something with his eye. So you'll see that when a person gets older, he has degeneration of the eye, so his sight decreases. Can't see as well. But if you gave him new parts to his eye, he'd see just as well. Why? Because the brain, where everything is registering on, is fine. The only thing is that the eye isn't functioning properly. So that's why he can't see well. The end result of all the seeing and all the mechanics of the eye is just that it registers in the brain. If you can get it to register in the brain without the eye, you wouldn't need the eye. And the bottom line is that it's in your brain, and that's how you know where things are and what things are. But you need the eye. The same thing is, just like the eye is to the brain is to the soul. It stands in the exact same kind of relationship. Okay? So if a person's brain is damaged, he might not be able to think anymore, but it's not because the soul is gone. The ideas are there, but he can't get to them in this existence unless the brain, the mechanics of the brain is working properly. A brain is a means, a tool. It's a tool. But the appreciation of Chachma, the ideas themselves, is the world of the soul. That's the world of the soul. I just want to say, I don't want to leave you hanging with this last. This last point, I think, is an important point, and I want to just add something to it. And that is, what is this based on? That idea. You'll say, it's a very nice analogy. What's it based on? It's based on the universe. It's based on the fact that in the universe as well, the physical things in the universe are only instances of ideas which are present in some unknown way. Ideas which are present that guide the phenomena. Every phenomenon is only one instance, but the idea is an eternal concept. Okay? This particular rock may not be able to fall anymore. It's destroyed. But others will be able to do the exact same thing. Why? Because the principle is there. Now that principle is not a physical phenomenon. That principle is something which is so, exists, but it doesn't exist in the same way as the physical rock existed. Now the mind can tune itself into that world beyond the physical. It can tune itself into it, and that's the uniqueness of human thought, the human mind. That's why, just like the world of ideas is a world which is beyond the physical, the world of mind is also beyond the physical. But in order to function in this existence, the brain must be able to work, otherwise it can't function. But if, for instance, the person would have a defective brain, you correct it, then all as a matter of fact, the Rambam says there is knowledge that doesn't require memory. Knowledge that doesn't require memory means that the mind, when it learns how to think, it improves itself, and it has an intuition. And that intuition you don't need any memory. That's like an intrinsic improvement in the apparatus itself. That's the apparatus of the soul. That's not the apparatus of the brain. It's the same brain that he had 20 years ago, but the soul has been refined. So that the existence of the soul and the existence of ideas are interrelated. are interrelated. Just like ideas exist beyond physical phenomena, the soul that can tap into that, those ideas, is also beyond the physical. And that's the part of, that's really the part of man that's beyond the physical world. That's the part of man which is a selam alakim. That's the uniqueness of human thought. Okay? That's the matana that God gave man. That's the special gift. That's why you say, Shinasa me chachmaso labas lamam. Ubo techezi. And in Torah you will see. What will you see? What will you see? So, this Ramses. Ubo techezi means Ramses. Ratzalamu ha'emes. You'll see the truth. Okay. Very nice. But what does it add to the previous statement? That's what we have to know. And next he says, v'siv u'bale ba. Now what does the word bale mean? Siv comes from seva, means all. Bale achare velosi hoiso liedna. That's what we said, right? Achare velosi hoiso liedna. Age. Siv u'bale ba. You should get old. Age in Torah. That was it. Umina lo sazua. You should never remove yourself from Torah. Why? She'in l'chom midah tovah hemeh. That's the end of the Bhagavan statement. Okay? Interesting. One philosopher one time said that, he said correctly, he said, they asked him what Judaism is. He said, it's the sum total of human knowledge. That's what he said. Sum total of human knowledge. That's what he said. And it was Philo of Alexandria. Okay? Sum total of human knowledge. That's the same thing as this mission is saying. Same statement, and Bhagavad statement. So what does it mean, Ubotechzi? Ubotechzi means, and in it you'll see the truth. What does it mean, you'll see the truth? It means like this. Of course, you just said before, what do you mean, you'll see the truth? It means like this. And this is something which a person has to know, again, as a guide, which means like this, that the secrets of knowledge are all in Torah. They're there. They're really, many times, they're staring at you, but you just can't see them because you're not on the level. But they're right there. They're right there. And as a person keeps gaining knowledge, certain things start lighting up on the path. And you start thinking, that's what it's open. It's open there. But you can't see it at first because you're in the world of your emotions. And as you keep going, you start saying, Razei Torah. Razei Torah. See the next Mishnah? It says, the person is also getting Torah Shema. It says, Umegalim obeys. Umegalim lo Razei Torah. The secrets of the Torah. That means these secrets are certain things that when a person's on the level, he starts seeing he's going completely in the wrong way. He's following his emotions completely in the wrong way. Sometimes the wrong way that he's going in is because of his tithes. Sometimes the wrong way he's going in is because of his Yetzer Tov. That happens also. It means the person is being overpowered. So let's explain that. What's the difference? Mofanenu, I understand. So what's Macharenu? Macharenu, sometimes a certain gets him back in and encourages it. You get a mushroom of a person that learns too much. He says, falls in yeshiva, he's supposed to go to sleep. He says, no, learn all night. He says, that's something Macharenu. Then the fellow gets tired, he's tired all day, or gets sick eventually because he gets too run down. So sometimes a person makes a mistake, the mistakes in life are not necessarily because of the tithes. Everybody always talks about the tithes. But mistakes in life can be made because you don't see reality, because your image, sometimes your image of yourself is incorrect and proper, and therefore you can't see the truth. But every answer was found in, the answers are found in the others, but you have to be able to see it. You have to be able to see it. Matter of fact, I was going to talk about today, I thought I'd get finished very quickly with this, but next time we'll do Yonah next time. Yeah, Yonah. Another young. You see some amazing ideas. But the idea of Yonah, for instance, doesn't mean he's running away from God, running away from the full God. That's strange. Is there nothing? There's a very big yisod there. But you're not going to be able to see it if you're still working on an infantile level. In Yadus, that's the way it is. That as a person develops, he sees deeper and deeper ideas, different ideas. And he sees that that's the truth, but before he couldn't see, he simply wasn't ready. He wasn't ready for it. That's what means uvah sechetu. And in this, you'll see the truth. If you look with your mind's eye, you'll see. Yes? I just want to say one more word. The truth means, what does the truth mean? The truth means that which is contrary to the emotional conclusion. That's what the truth means. It means there are conclusions that we make in our lives based upon emotions. The truth is based upon chachma. That's what it means. Vos sechazi means as you advance, you'll see more and more that certain conclusions that you drew in your own personal life are made based upon certain emotions. But you see, it doesn't fit in with this, doesn't fit in with that. And then you see what the true idea is, and you're astounded at the idea. You see the mistake you made. Yes. And also the concept, that's the same, what's the concept of age? You should age in Torah? That's really an extension of the same thing. But there are two ways that a person gains knowledge. One way is simply by advancing. Like any other progress, he advances. Okay? But the other way is through age. Age is also a very special kind of progress that a person can only make because of his age. And I'll quote a Greek philosopher, Socrates, who said, made a very good statement. He said that when the eye of the body is weak, the eye of the mind is strong. Which means the aging process, it means as the person ages, he uncovers new things in Torah. He sees new ideas that he didn't see before. Ideas that he couldn't see as a younger person. In the aging process, he ages in Torah. That's why it says, the sivu vale bo, he ages in Torah. And as he ages, new ideas of Torah become a part of his life, become a part of his makeup, part of his existence, his nature. So then he says, Uminolo sozua shein lecho mida tova imenu. What does it mean? It means like this. It means that in other areas of science, there is advancement. A person studies geometry, certain limit of time, studies algebra. He advances to hierarchy, he advances to higher areas of mathematics. Okay? He's studying calculus, he's not going to study algebra anymore. And Torah's not that way. In Torah, there is never a time you're not going to advance to another subject. You'll never advance to another subject. It's an unusual subject. It's a subject that you're raised in, you advance in, and you never advance out of it. That's what it means. It means that if you do leave it, it means that you're leaving a mida, which is an integral part of your nature. That's why you see even Chacham Gedolim, who are into philosophy, the one says metaphysics, that's the highest level of thought, of human thought, the most abstract. Have you ever heard of the Ben Halacha? Never. The Rambam Ben Halacha, never. The Kiva Ben Halacha. He went to the Pirates and came out successfully. Does that mean he stopped learning his life? Stopped learning? Never. Nevi'im worked around the city. Nevi'im worked in Taharas, the most abstract areas. They themselves couldn't really fully apprehend areas of halacha and Taharas. So he's referring to halacha as well. He doesn't mean to say that minolo sazua means, of course, you can't get away from Torah. How can you get away from Torah? Everything's Torah. Metaphysics is Torah. Maisim Merkava, everything's in Torah. We mentioned before all the principles. The principles of metaphysics, I didn't even discuss the metaphysical principles because they're so far removed from our personal lives that I didn't even discuss it. But of course you understand, Maisim Merkava is the highest metaphysics. But he means in Minolo says, well, he doesn't mean from the generic sense of Torah. That's impossible because Torah is all inclusive. He means from Halacha. Why? She'in l'chom midah tovim er. That's the words of Gemara, use Lashon Midah. The Gemara says, Mikra is Eina Midah, and Mishnah is Midah, the Eina Midah, and Tershabal Peh is the ultimate Midah. I don't know the exact wording, but that's where you have that Lashon, Midah Nasr. It means Torah Shabal Peh. You never leave Torah Shabal Peh, because it fits a person's mind. The way the method of thinking, the approach, it's a part of the person. It's like a person saying that in the physical sense he's going to leave ever doing exercise. It's impossible because that's a part of man stops moving, he dies. It's a part of his nature. It means the way of thinking of halacha, the abstract method of thought, is a natural environment for his mind. Minolo sazua, natural, it's constructed in a way that's a natural environment for his mind. It satisfies every component of the intellect. Even the mathematical component, the conceptual component, everything is satisfied in the halacha. So that's what I mean, minolo sazua. Okay. Ben Hehe Omer Zunfisho. Ben Hehe Omer Lefum Tzaira Agra. Okay. Lefum Tzaira Agra means according to the, they will learn it today, they coined it. According to the pain of the game. Yeah. But they coined it with regard to other areas. Not with regard to perfection. Alright. What it means is, okay. What I want you to do is like this. It says over here Lefum Tzaira Agra. Say the more pain, the better it is. Okay. But we have a principle on the contrary, that really Torah is supposed to be something which is extremely enjoyable. Okay? Not supposed to be painful. So there's a conflict between two concepts. On the one hand, you say that the more pain there is, the better off we are, the more beneficial it is. On the other hand, we say no. That a person's lomay Torah l'shma is not supposed to be any pain at all. It's supposed to be the ultimate enjoyment. He is a person that's in the greatest world, the most beautiful, enjoyable world that any man can be in. He's the most fortunate human being. He's the most fortunate human being, but he's not in pain. How do you reconcile with this statement? So the Rambam already tried to reconcile it in his Akdama to the Pirush Mishnayos. What I'll ask you to do is, for next week, go through the Rambam's answer and tell me if it's in line with this statement. That's the problem I'm having. It's in the Agdama Pirush Mishnayos, Perek Shishi. He mentions it in the end of Perek Shishi. It's a very interesting Perek. It's a beautiful Perek. Famous philosophical principle. And by the way, the Goyim took up the same problem as the Rambam. Came from the exact opposite of it. But the Perek Shishi. So you go through Perek Shishi, and then I'll discuss it with you. If I can't do it, I can't get time to get started. What? I made a mistake. I mean, it's Agdama to Pirush Mishnayos of Avos. The Pirush on Avos. The Shmona Prakam, the sixth parak.